Welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And today, our guest on QSO is ARRL, Regulatory Information Manager, Dan Henderson, N1ND, and he's the man in charge of Field Day. We're going to be talking about Field Day today on QSO. It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna. And it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And check out the special pricing right now. Here at QSO, we've got something new. And that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air. But don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. Here's a reminder. QSO will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your Field Day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He's the ARRL, Regulatory Information Manager, and this is the man in charge of Field Day. Our guest is Dan Henderson, N1ND, and he's the Regulatory Affairs Manager with the American Radio Relay League. And all that sounds pretty official, and actually it is, but Dan is also the head coordinator for Field Day, and that's something that's a lot of fun. And I guess that's what we want to talk about, Field Day. So, Dan, what's going on this year, 2009?
Hi, Ted. It's first a pleasure to be here, and I have great fun. Even when I switched and left the contest branch to become the regulatory affairs manager, I brought Field Day with me because it's near and dear to my heart, like it is to many hams. I think across the country, an awful lot of us, our first real exposure to getting on the air operating and exposure to ham radio was Field Day, and it's a good way for me to keep grounded in what this hobby is supposed to be about. And what's it about this year? It's about fun. I think sometimes we get so involved with emergency preparedness into Field Day and the contesting into Field Day and doing all that we forget that Field Day, more than anything else, is a chance for us to have fun. And I don't know anybody that ever got into this hobby because they wanted to sit around and discuss how to spend the club's money, or, you know, they wanted to get into legal fights over antennas and things like that. I think we all got into this hobby for the fun of it. And the emergency side is important and things like that, and I don't want to sound like I'm downplaying it, but I'm trying to keep Field Day focused on having fun for a change, and nice breath of fresh air sometimes.
Well, you know, there's something to be said about that, only from this side of the fence, and I've observed this. This especially holds true with contesting. And what I mean by that is contests are supposed to be fun, but yet they can turn into a very competitive, very serious situation.
No, there's competitive contesting out there. My goodness, I'm surprised.
Anyways, and at times, I really think we get to the point where it does take the fun out of it. It becomes work, you know. I mean, it's like we've just got, you know. So, I don't know. I agree with you. I think there's the serious side to this thing, and there's the fun side of this thing, and there has to be a balance somewhere. Because
absolutely, and my focus the past year in particular, and not for any other reason than is of talking to people over the past few years, and we have been in such an MCOM, emergency preparedness, emergency communication, you know, when all else fails. Mode that I have really been trying to focus on having fun this year. Our field day booth at Dayton Hamvention this year and the ARRL Expo was really geared towards fun. You know, we had frisbees we were giving away. We were getting people signed up to the online field day locator on the web, getting posters out to get in the community. And field day is the perfect opportunity for the newcomer to come in that knows maybe nothing about radio, see a little bit of things in action, maybe the old-timer who's been around, again, I've been around 40 years, and you can almost scratch on the surface some ways of some of the modes that I've used and things like that. So it's a chance to learn new things, to to bring people in, scouts, school groups. It's amazing the kind of young people that you get involved, but to get the young at heart, too. And I think that's what's important about field day. If we ever lose sight in this hobby of the fun element of it, I think we've lost the hobby, and that would be a sad day.
Well, you know, field day, I noticed that we, of course, now we'll be broadcasting live during field day this year like we did last year, and having everybody call in and tell what they're doing and how they're set up and where they're located and a little bit about their club and organ, you know. And that was really fun last year. Gosh, I mean, we had people calling in from everywhere under the sun. But you know what we wound up talking about with everybody? What was the common denominator of this whole?
It has to be the food.
Yes. Yes. It was what?
I tell people when I talk out in the clubs and groups about field day that the most important person in field day, after the field day coordinator, the person setting it up for your club and organizing it, is the coordinator of the cover dish supper. And the weight of the ham's heart is definitely through the tummy, I understand. So field day without a good cover dish supper, and it's amazing what you see people coming up with to cook and to experience. And there's a great picture on the field day poster this year of a group that literally takes an old gas stove out, takes the portable canisters of propane out to use for their field day sign. I just love things like that.
Well, you know, it was interesting because I think we discovered last year, we came to the conclusion that on field day, the pig is the endangered species because everybody has a form of barbecue at field day, which is kind of interesting, I thought.
I've seen clubs that will have the fried chicken is also very big. And the one club that I keep waiting for the invitation from is the one that does their annual steak dinner every year for field day. And to me, the field day food is important because it does get everybody involved in, from the club, the spouses of the members, the children of the members. Field day is the largest on-the-air operating event in the world. There will be 35,000, give or take, field day participants reporting that we have reports on from the United States, and that's just those that are taking the time to send in the entries and that are counted at the sites. This doesn't include the groups that make it on the air and do it but don't send in the formal entry or things like that. And if you look at the field day population or the ham population in the United States, that's a much larger percentage than you will get for any other operating event in the U.S., and it is the largest operating event, I believe, in the world. Some of the other contests may get more entries, like CQ Worldwide will get more actual logs submitted, but they don't come anywhere near those numbers of just casual participants and people that are participating, be it the guy planning the food, the guy that sits down and runs the station for hours on an end making contacts, the guy who fuels the generator, the guy who makes sure that the generator is operated safely, the safety officer, or the person who sits there just shaking the hands of the people that visit the site and trying to tell a little bit of the ham radio story. They're all important, and that's what I think field day is about, the fun, and where we get to tell our story to not only newbies, but people who don't know what's going on. They may wander over to the site for a group that's set up, say, in a parking lot at a Walmart or something like that, which is frequently happening. And they come over, they see the antenna, maybe the fire department has bought out a piece of equipment, they use the ladder truck to put the antennas up and things like that. The more visual things that you do, the more open and access you are, the better the opportunity we have to tell the story. And that's to me, is the most important part of Field Day. I say this frequently, and some of my contest friends yell at me about this one, and I just take their heat good-naturedly. But 99% of a successful field day is done before the first contact is ever made. It's the planning. It's the equipment. It's the public relations. It's getting the educational components in. It's getting the media involved. It's getting the served agencies involved. And if you've done all of that, you've had a successful field day before you've ever made the first contact.
Our guest is Dan Henderson from the American Radio Relay League. We'll be right back with Dan right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas TW2010 and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? Do you want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, dot com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks, go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello. Tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air, but don't miss out. Send us an email, and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. Here's a reminder. QSL will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your field day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He is the ARRL Regulatory Information Manager, along with the man in charge of Field Day. Well, you know, I guess what I was going to say is Field Day is really the most opportune time for the hobby to show itself off to the general public in a community, because people come in and all of a sudden they go out to the site and they see tents set up and they see antennas up in trees and generators running, and then if they get in closer and if there's someone there to kind of help the visitors to tell what's going on, I can't think of anything that represents amateur radio any more completely than that does. Especially,
and you're exactly right, Ted. That is the quintessential Field Day image that most people have. You know, it is the motor homes that people will drag out or setting up under the canopies at the park picnic shelters. It is setting up in the middle of the fields. It is the guy that will climb the mountain. That's a great picture on the Field Day website from last year. www.arrl.org/contest, and look for the contest soapbox and look at some of the pictures from past field days and the stories that the clubs tell. The one that I was going to mention was a gentleman who gets his goats, and he uses his goats as pack animals to carry the equipment up to the top of the mountain. He's not going to be in a very public place, but it's an innovative thing, and he runs into hikers that are going through the mountain. Or you run into the guys, there's a group that has done Field Day for several years from their boats out in Narragansett Bay in Rhode Island. They're going to be at EOCs. They're going to be at shopping malls. They're going to be at veterans hospitals. There's nothing that you can't do with Field Day. And I'm a big proponent. I know that there are people that call it a contest. Field Day is not a contest. First and foremost, it is an on-the-air operating event. And it is our best opportunity, as you said, for us to go out and show what we can do, not just in an emergency, but the capabilities we have technically, the new modes, the new equipment, be it the satellite contacts, be it new modes such as PSK-31, which has become very popular. The largest number of contact growth in the past few years have been on digital modes because everybody now has the computer. It's an opportunity to use those computer skills to teach a child a little bit about ham radio. They may not want to learn Morse code. They maybe have mic fright. But you set them down in front of a computer keyboard and let them talk to somebody. They're doing that all the time in their homes anyway, and Field Day is an opportunity to tap that kind of resource.
Well, you know, I was going to say, when I was a kid, I remember going out to Field Day in Detroit, Michigan, with the Motor City Radio Club. And, of course, they used to have their meetings at the Henry Ford Museum, right in the old antique radio section. And, of course, there was everything under the sun in there. I mean, there was everything. But they had their Field Day at, I believe it was at Ford Field. And I remember going, and the atmosphere there was like a big party. You know, it was like all these guys that are just totally, completely ate up with radio are all there, and they are having the absolute biggest time of their life. And I think, you know, I understand the people wanting to do the contest side of it, if you want to call it that. You know, want to work all those stations, and that's very important, I think. I think one of the most important things, or one of the coolest things I ever saw, are the clubs that after Field Day is over with, they go to the trouble to take a map out of the United States and actually put a dot everywhere they've made a contact. And because to the average general public, that's real impressive to think they're doing that without any infrastructure at all. That's just strictly that antenna up there in the tree talking across the country. And but that festive part of it is so important. And I also think that it's important that we become or amateur radio operators become friendlier to the public. In other words, looking at it from the perspective, this is our opportunity to really demonstrate this hobby and to bring some new folks in. You know, it's a good place to invite everybody to come to, a good focal point.
Yeah, the most important component of that is the publicity. In getting the TV station may not come out and film you, but the asking of this TV station to come, to make them aware of what we do, and they're always looking for a good story on a slow news day. The newspaper is always looking to publicize this kind of thing. And you know, getting the public out, and that's why there's so many bonus points related to this kind of thing. Setting up in a public location gives you bonus points. The attempt at the publicity factor gives you bonus points. Having an information table available gives you bonus points. And, you know, the opportunity to tell our story. You mentioned the group in Detroit. One of my favorite field days of all time was just about 7 years ago. I had been invited, while I was the contest manager, to come to to Ottawa, Canada, where there were seven clubs that were working together at the Canadian Museum of Science and Industry. And now everybody knows that if you have three hams in one town, you always have two clubs. And that's unfortunately the way some of the hams get together. But this was seven clubs. There were five English-speaking clubs and two from Provence, Quebec, right over the river, two French-speaking clubs. We had over 300 people involved in operating, setting up antennas, and the cooperation. We actually operated that year as 35 Alpha. We had 35 stations on the air simultaneously, and the antennas were strung up between rockets, literally, I forget what kind of rockets, but the rockets you would see used in aerospace on the grounds of the museum, and a tank, and other equipment like that interspersed. The elements of it, you could see in the children's eyes that were out there, this is really cool. And to me, you know, that every contact that was made that year was special because somebody was getting involved. Somebody was getting caught up in what ham radio can do. It's not all about fun and games. It is not all, but it also is not all about MCOM and emergency stuff. Each of those components is important. You mentioned the club putting the pins on the map where they contacted. If you want to hear excitement, if you want to see raw excitement, let your club make a contact with an astronaut on the International Space Station. We've been very fortunate over the past 7 or 8 years to have many astronauts that have committed to ham radio when they go up that will get on during field day. They may only make 100 contacts because there might not be a good pass over the United States during a particular weekend, and they may have other duties that are involved. But you let a club make a contact with the International Space Station, and the excitement and the electricity that goes through that field day site from one end to the other, I'll hear about it within 24 hours because that's one of the things they will go post on the website or they will send you an email about it. I can't promise that's going to happen this year. I noticed that the shuttle has been delayed by, launch has been delayed by 4 days, but there is a possibility that one of the astronauts that's going up on the space shuttle to the International Space Station on the next mission has tentatively committed, if they have the free time and it works out into their work schedule up there, to get on during the air. You never can tell what's going to happen.
Boy, but that's going to be a pileup.
for about 14 minutes on the pass over the United States. But let me tell you, they've been very professional. The first field day where an astronaut got on, I knew in advance that they had made a commitment to be on the air for it. And when field day happened, they got on the air. When the next shuttle went up to retrieve them and bring them home, a field day 10 was presented to the astronaut in outer space. And it's just our chance to say thank you for what y'all are doing to help bring the enthusiasm to the hobby.
Our guest is Dan Henderson from the American Radio Relay League. We'll be right back with Dan right after this. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station
in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW-2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna. And it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now. At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're listening, how the signal's coming in, or if you're listening by podcast. But be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because we're going to have some really, really neat things to give away. We'll be putting those things up on the website and telling you more about them on the air. Be sure and don't miss out. Send us an email and put in there, I want to win. Go to QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, RANDALL, and we'll look for your email. Here's a reminder. QSO will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your Field Day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He is the ARRL Regulatory Information Manager, along with the man in charge of Field Day. That's the thing, you know, that is incredible. And we did several special programs about astronauts and hams in space, and aired an awful lot of the audio of Richard Garriott talking to all of these different schools and different places where he was talking to the youth and young people. And that was just really special, really, really exciting. So,
and just the thrill that goes through a school when all of a sudden it's the excitement is there. Hey, our school is going to talk to the astronaut. But let that first contact make, and you can almost hear the gasp. We're really doing it. Just the building inhales together, and it's just it's an amazing sound.
Yeah, I guess the thing of it is if you know, we really do need to focus on inviting young people out for field day. And I know there's a lot of groups that do that. Some are far better at it than others, but it needs to be made, I guess I want to say, top of mind in that, you know, what are we doing to promote field day to young people?
Because, actually, in several things. For years, there was the old novice tech station, where newcomers could come in a dedicated station without a lot of the pressure on it to where they could get on the air and learn how to operate. After license restructuring and all, that became what is now known as the Get on the Air station, the GOTUS station. And it's for newly licensed people, for generally inactive people. It's for the newcomers that are coming to the site. We encourage, there always has to be a control operator who can operate where that station is working because Part 97 rules always apply. Field Day doesn't give anybody special permission to break the rules, but this is a chance to get those people on the air. And the other strong element that we have of that in Field Day is there is a youth bonus. There are bonus points available for each young person that you have on the site that will make at least one contact. And you will see lots of pictures when you go to the Field Day soapbox online. You will see the Boy Scout groups or the church groups or just, you know, the parents bringing their children in. And you see the looks on these kids' faces, and it takes me back to 40 years ago when I got licensed, almost 40, be 40 at the end of the year. And I remember that first Field Day, and I remember the first contact at that first Field Day. And I like to talk when I'm out visiting clubs and groups, I like to talk about the magic of that first contact. But I also remind people, too, Ted, that your license is only the second most important piece of paper you get in this hobby. The most important piece of paper you get in this hobby, do you know what it is, Ted?
Now, what would that be?
That would be the first QSL card that you ever get.
Okay.
Because it's not only, I got my license, I did something with it. And that's the opportunity that Field Day starts. It starts that process to not only just earn a little bit, but to take it to the next level and use it. That's why we have the incentives for the youth, for the involvement. Plus, you know, frankly, we've got the get on the air pins. You get on the air from the GOTA station, your club ought to be, and I'm not trying to sell stuff, but your club needs to be out there giving those kids that are out there that little GOTA pin that's available from the ARRL to help them come in, right? Because they're going to look at that pin down the road. Maybe not get their license this year, but a couple of years from now, they're going to say, hey, I remember when I got that. That was fun. That's something I might want to look at again. And so we keep trying to provide these kind of opportunities because if you look at us, Ted, the good news is that the average age of amateur radio is declining. The bad news is it's declining because all the old guys are dying off. And we've got to find the ways to keep it invigorated. We have to find the ways to get newcomers into the hobby, be they people that may have been interested when they were children and after they get out of college and get their life started and families and cars and houses, they come into the hobby. But we also have to concentrate on having the newcomers, the young children. When you've got hams on the air 4, 5, and 6 years old, you know, with their dads sitting there like Kids Day, our great activity that we do, to get them involved, the more opportunities we can do that, the better the health of our hobby is going to be long run.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, one thing I think Field Day does is it rekindles something that I feel is somewhat missing, and I'll tell you what that is. When you first got your novice license, most people were of the mind, you know, especially if you were younger, you couldn't wait to come home, flip on the receiver, flip on the transmitter, and sit there and pound out a CQ, and you couldn't wait until the mail came because you wanted a QSL card from everybody you talked to. Every contact you made, you wanted a QSL.
And I have to tell you this story. You said you would come home from school. Some of us, of course, this would not be me, of course. I do know of certain people that would magically be sick first thing in the morning, and they just didn't feel like going to school that day. Those contacts came a whole lot easier when nobody was in the house while I was down in CQ all morning.
Well, yeah, I can honestly tell you that I played hooky a number of days.
No, I would never have done that.
I did, you know, and it was irresistible. You just couldn't hardly help it.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And the great story that I had frankly laid out of school one day because 15 meters seemed to be open, and I spent all day. I was working a bunch of F6s and F5s and DL4s and G3s and all that. And just before I stopped to grab some lunch, I heard this very faint CQ out there, HV3SJ. Now, I'm looking through my list of country prefixes and all, and I can't find that. And so I make the contact with them and all that, and I'm never quite sure, you know, that I got the call sign. I had to have blown this call sign. And it was the Vatican, which is rare DX even today. And when my Elmer was home later in the evening, and after an appropriate amount of time to make it look like I had really been homesick all day and not playing on the radio, I called my Elmer and I asked him, I said, "Frank, is this a good one?" And he gave me the best advice that I've ever had when it comes to DXing. He said, "Dan, anything you haven't worked is a good one."
Well,
and I have that card on my wall today.
Well, I guess what I was saying is that it was so much fun to work. I mean, I was, of course, in Michigan, but I didn't care. I mean, if I worked a station in Ohio or Indiana or someplace, I was just as eager to work those stations, and I wanted a QSL card from all of them, you know. But there was
Do you remember what your last state was for worked all states?
No.
I do. Mine was North Dakota.
Really? That's
and,
a hard one.
I can remember the guy was at the Air Force base up in, I think it's Grand Forks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that call, and when I got through, you could hear the entire house shake with the jubilation. And my QSL card request with the SASA went out the next morning.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, here's field day comes along. Now, you know, we've been doing our normal ham radio routine. You know, you got your group that you hang out with on 75 meters, or you've got a certain amount of DX that you chase. And, you know, different things, different people do different things, you know. But now field day comes along, and here you are calling CQ, and anybody to answer you, or you get on and you answer anyone calling CQ, it kind of opens it back up again. I don't know if you follow what I'm saying. In other words,
oh, absolutely.
We kind of close down and get into routines. When field day comes along, you blow all the restrictions and doors off, and all the restrictions, I guess I want to say, in your mind as to who you can call and talk to and whether you can or cannot call CQ on a certain frequency. And all bets are off, and it's in it, and everybody's off and running. And I think that brings back a whole lot of that magic.
Oh, absolutely. The enthusiasm that you see to a person at a field day fight that has ever participated, or it might be their first time, and it's not that you sense it. You see the smiles on the faces. You can hear the lilt in their voices. And it's just, it's one of the reasons that I love field day so much, because it is the quintessential part of our hobby. It is the time where the old and the new come together, where the young and the old come together, where the adventurous and the not quite so adventurous come together to learn something new, to teach something new. It's important to remember that it's not just about teaching. It's important for everybody to continue to learn from field day as well, be it using a new mode like JT65. Maybe you're going to do a moon bounce contact. But the educational component, which is one of the bonuses that we have, some kind of formal activity to instruct, to share some of the knowledge and skills. It may be related to the national traffic system and teaching people how to properly format messages and to send messages, which is also another bonus component of field day. It may be teaching somebody that's never seen how to solder properly. That was one of the great things at Dayton this year, that the hands-on area of ARRL Expo, where people could come in and build a very simple kit and learn how to solder. And I, Ted, I'm sure you're like me. I have built four or five things from Heathkit back in my early days.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned some of those skills, and I think that's something that we're missing in Field Day, is the opportunity for us to reinvent those skills for others as well. And it's just an important part that I don't think we can sell short in any way, shape, or fashion on Field Day.
Our guest is Dan Henderson from the American Radio Relay League. We'll be right back with Dan right after this. It operates 20 through 10 meters. It's stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna, and it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine? Or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello. Tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air. But don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. Here's a reminder. QSO will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your Field Day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He is the ARRL Regulatory Information Manager, along with the man in charge of Field Day. Well, one of the things I think we need to guard on Field Day and look out for, and I'll relate a story to you, and I'm not telling this story to make anybody feel bad. I'm just using a personal illustration to show or to illustrate something here. I'll figure out what I'm trying to say here in a minute. I have two sons. One is about 28 years old, KG4WXW, and he is chief engineer for a group of radio stations here in the Nashville area. Actually, it's the Trevecca Nazarene College group, and they have WNAZ, WNRZ, and WENO. I have another son, he's 24, who's chief engineer for the Dave Ramsey Show. And Dave, of course, is on like 400 radio stations and on Fox television and all that kind of stuff. So, but these guys weren't always in those positions. Now, when they were younger, back just a few years ago, we wanted to participate in Field Day very badly. And we had made our rounds to try to find some place because they enjoyed actually doing something. You know, really not just showing up and operating. And what used to kind of bother them is if we'd go out to a site and somebody had a really poorly constructed antenna, you know, and the technical side of their Field Day station was just horrible. You know, they really don't want to sit down and operate that, if follow what I'm saying, you know.
But
the few clubs that we had been around were not really open for young people to come in and do something. They were a bunch of old guys, and it was Field Day, and get out of their way, they're going to do Field Day, you know. So, go ahead.
And let me share a story. The highest score that I've ever had with a group on Field Day, and I'm not going to mention the club's name, we had very top-flight operators like myself. Not that I'm the greatest operator in the world, but people who are very experienced contesters, and we decided, you know, Dan, I ran the 15-meter CW station all night, all day, and at night I went over to 75-meter CW. We had a very experienced operator who ran 40 meters for the full 24 hours. We had somebody else on 20 meters the entire 24 hours. We had somebody on 160. When they weren't on 160, they were on 10. We had five stations going. And only five people make contacts out of a club of 300.
Wow.
And I will plead guilty. I'm not the person that planned it, but I did sit down and ran the CW station. The next year when I became Field Day chairman, let me tell you, we had half the score that we had. But I also had 170 people that made contacts that year, even just one in the log. And I'll leave it to somebody else to decide which was the better of the two Field Days.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, what happened was, is one year we went with a Field Day group, and we showed up, and these boys wanted to pull antennas up in trees. I mean, they were wanting to, you know, my older son, David, he just climbs. He's like a monkey. He goes all the way to the top. So we were pulling these dipoles up in the trees. I think we put two dipoles up and had open wire line and all that kind of stuff. And these guys were just, they dug the generator out and tested the generator. They were just having fun. They were in their element, okay? Next year came along, we weren't able to do that. Matter of fact, we were told right up front that some of the old guys had it planned and we weren't going to be able to do what we did last year. So we started looking around and we wound up, you know, and I would encourage folks to do this if it comes down to it. We wound up taking and setting up in the vacant lot next to our property. And we just ran Field Day on a very small scale. We had our generator running. We had a tent up, and they all were out there. They pulled antennas up in the trees, and they had a ball, you know, logging all these stations. So
you're making a very strong point. Field Day is a lot of things to a lot of people. I have many friends in the contest community. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in Rochester, New York, with some wonderful friends over there. But Field Day is their contest. We are the defending national champions. They are going to have fun because they are going to try to defend their title. More power to them. Knock your socks off. But they also will take the time to make sure that there's something for the newcomer to do and things like that. They've got the right spirit of it. And we spar frequently over this because they know that the last thing I worry about, I've written the Field Day results article for, 11 years now, and I don't think you have ever seen me once declare somebody as the national champion or the winner of a category. Yes, we print scores sorted from top to bottom by category, but that's just a means of getting the information around. I firmly believe that anybody who participates in Field Day that meets the goal that they set for themselves, be it be it to be the top score in a category or to get 50 people on the air or just to get through the weekend without having a disaster happen. If you've made that happen, you've won Field Day. And that's just really the key to me, that we can all win out of Field Day. And if you want to run it like a contest, great. Do it. You're going to have fun with it. If you want to have the social event, knock your socks off. If you want to hike up to the top of the mountain with the billy goats carrying your stuff and run from up there and get that beautiful view from sunset up there, you've won too. And that's the wonderful thing about Field Day. We can all be successful at it. The only people that aren't successful at it are the ones that never try it.
Well, you know, I guess what I was going to say, and I didn't finish my story, not that I have to, but the
I interrupt all the time.
That's okay, though. That's all right. That's what you're here for, sir. The thing was, is they set up in a tent in a vacant lot, and they had fun because they were in their element, if that makes any sense. They had pulled the antennas up. They had wired up the stuff, and they were on the air calling day and night, and they took shifts and all that sort of thing. And when they all got done, it was a pretty impressive list of contacts they had. But they weren't really trying to contest or score. They were wanting to make as many contacts as they could to as many places as they could just because that's what they were wanting to do. And I thought that, to me, that brought back that magic. But my point was is that I think groups ought to be cognizant of people inside the group. And what I mean by that is that Field Day is that special, magical amateur radio event where I think it's important that folks get to be able to participate at whatever level they want to participate in. Now, what I wished would have happened was the organization that I was dealing with that came and said, hey, would you guys come over here and stick these antennas up? Because they're flat good at it. I mean, when they go climb these things and pull these things way up into the top of the trees and all that, well, they're really good at it. Okay, well, I think that if we pay attention as amateurs inside of our groups and start looking for the folks inside of our groups and organizations and saying, well, what would you like to do on Field Day? And then make sure that those people get to do that magical thing that really turns their crank.
And maybe somebody who is good at glad-handing people when they come in, it's good to have you at the site. Here's our field. Yeah, here's our go-to station. Are you familiar with CW? Are you familiar with PSK-31? If it's somebody that's good at that, use their talent. If it's somebody who hasn't been on the air for quite a while, put them on the air at the go-to station. If it's somebody that can help design and build an antenna, put them there. One of my favorite things, stories about Field Day, and I'm going to use his name, Dan Street, K1TO, who is one of the world-class contesters. Dan, for the past few years, has operated Field Day. He's been the mentor for the GOTA station at the club back home. He doesn't get on and make the contacts, but he's sharing his strength and skill of teaching how to get on the air, how to make contacts. There is a place in Field Day for everybody, be it somebody like Dan, who's got the strength and the skill to be able to mentor people. It may be the guys like your son who are great at playing the monkeys to get up into the trees and hang the antennas. It might be the guy who got his license because his dad made him, and he might be the perfect person to help run the generator. There's always a skill that everybody has that can be useful and beneficial to that Field Day site. And the challenge to the clubs, the challenge to the president of the club, to the Field Day chairman, is to match those people with those skills and give them the opportunity to shine.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, you were talking about, having somebody around, I think that if we don't do that, we've really missed the point. We've got to have someone who's out there looking and says, well, here comes one, you know, and can usher that person over. And if they don't know what it is, explain, you know, briefly what ham radio is. Maybe have some of the ARRL stuff available for handout. I shouldn't say maybe. I should probably say absolutely have something to give them. You know, a little pamphlet, brochure, or something that says what amateur radio is. But then being able to show them CW in action and say, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Morse code. And hopefully the club would have somebody on the air that's really good and proficient at it, you know, and they could sit and watch somebody actually communicate in Morse code. You know, this is something that's unheard of today. People don't know what it is. They haven't seen it. They have never seen it in operation other than maybe on a television movie, you know, or something like that, but they've never seen it in operation, but to see it live, and then be able to tell the person, now you see all these tents and antennas and everything. We are in contact with basically every state in the United States and all kinds of locations just like this. And, you know, the people light up, but I think you have to have somebody that's going to be standing there just like the guy at the front door at Walmart, you know?
Exactly.
You know,
and again, that's why we have the public relations table with the materials and the handouts and all. That's another one of the bonuses you can have. That person is the kiss of death sometimes to clubs and things like that, not just for field day, but regular club meetings. And yeah, I see this happen frequently where a visitor will come to the club meeting. They don't know anybody. They may be a hand that's moved to the area, maybe somebody interested in the hobby. They're not quite sure where to get started. And how many club meetings have you seen somebody like that show up? Nobody talks to them. Nobody tries to engage them in what's going on. And how many times do you see them after that? And that's something that we all have to be cognizant of at field day. If you're set up in the Walmart parking lot, you need to have, it's a great analogy, the Walmart greeter. You need the greeters there. You need people to help engage people that may be driving by and just stop and get out. And, you know, you're setting them up in the park and they're out doing their walk with their dog. Engage them. You know, we're telling our story. And that's what field day is. It is the storybook of what the ham radio community brings to the community itself. From the emergency end, from the public service end, be it Skywarn, be it traffic handling, be it just having fun. You know, this is the whole gambit of stuff that you can demonstrate at a field day site. And that's the magic of the planning. If you've done that well, I go back to my comment earlier, 99% of the successful field day is done before that first contact is ever made, and that's one of the key components to it. Another component along that way is you've got to have the public officials that's going to be dealing with it, you're trying to deal with. The emergency management director, the mayor, the town councilman, the fire chief, the police sheriff, the congressman, the senator, they're frequently, every year that I've been here, I can consciously remember pictures of maybe Governor Baldelli from Maine a couple of years ago coming to the to a field day site to try to communicate with the governor of, I believe it was New Jersey or Delaware. It was Delaware, I think. And we had set this up in advance to where the two governors could get on the air. Propagation was not very good. We had a solar flare during the middle of it. But get the opportunity to get the public officials there that we are occasionally going to ask things for. You know, we're going to ask for help with H.R. 2160 in Congress, and getting the congressman there to show them we're not an outdated technology. We still have a relevant value to Homeland Security, to the emergency community services, to the local community itself, be it the walkathons and things like that, or the bigger picture things, and getting those people involved, making the conscious effort to invite them and get them to your site is key to that component. And we give you bonus points for doing that. Getting the people from the Red Cross, from what we call the served agencies, the Salvation Army, the Saturn people in that case, from CAP, from other agencies, served agencies that we would work with, getting them involved, the effort to get them there is worth bonus points because, again, it's another opportunity to tell our story to the groups that we need to be dealing with.
Well, you know, I was going to say, as far as inviting folks out to field day, that is, to me, one of the key things. And, of course, when you get somebody out there, you want to be able to shoot a picture of that person there and to have that picture for use, you know, on your club's website or whatever, and take them around. But I think having the people there pre-planning, and if folks haven't done this yet, find some people inside your organization and have them placed strategically so that when people come by to visit, they aren't walking around trying to figure out what's going on, or they don't just get frustrated and everyone's caught up in it and they just turn around and leave. You know, they see the tents, they see the antennas, and they just leave.
Absolutely. Let me just to expand on one point you made, the pictures on the website and things like that. We are always looking for good, high-quality, high-resolution photographs that we can use on the web, that we can use in other ARRL publications, that I can use in the Field Day write-up every year. We get literally, Ted, we get probably 10,000 photographs submitted from Field Day. In the age of the digital camera, everybody is out taking photos. It's an easy way to exchange them. I would put them on a server to exchange with us to where we can see what your groups are doing. A couple of keys about that, if I can digress just for 1 second. Make sure you don't have the pictures of the guys that look like me, the fat guys with the ball cap with the beer in one hand standing in front of the generator. That may prove that you've had emergency power at the site, but that picture is never going to be used. We want the pictures that are well lit. Put some thought, the pictures that are well thought out, well formatted, in you know, what you're trying to display are the ones that are more likely to be noticed. I'm always looking for good pictures for the Field Day write-up. Go to the ARRL contest soapbox again after Field Day. Post your group's pictures there. Post your group's story there. Because you start sharing what you do with another 200, I think it was 271, and if I'm wrong on that number, 270-some groups last year got on the website to share what the excitement of what they did. I look at those. I will go through every one of those to start finding good high-resolution photographs that we can use in some of our publications. I can't promise I'm going to use everything. I always get a group that will send me, hey, you know, we'd really like to have our picture in QST. And yes, I'm sure you would. You and probably 2,000 other groups that are out there doing it. We can't promise everybody's picture QST space or the cover or things like that. But when you post them to the website, make sure that they're good, high quality, and they're well thought out photographs. If you can't see the guy's face, it might be a great picture in the background, but if you can't see the face of the guy operating or the faces of the three kids that are working at the GOTUS station, if we can't see those, they're less likely to be used. So put some thought into the pictures you're doing, but it's a great outlet for your group, for your club, to share what it's doing, and good photos are always appreciated.
Now, when you talk about high resolution, if folks don't quite understand that. They've got a digital camera. What should they be shooting at? How many megapixels, let's just say, if you're going to shoot a picture and you're going to email it to someone, what should the ideal resolution be?
The higher, the better. The technical layout people can give you more along those lines. That's not my area. But I do know the less resolution, the less pixels of the picture, when we have to blow it up to maybe fill space or whatever, it gets grainy. And so you want something in the 3, 5, 6, 7 megapixels, as large as you can make it with good detailed quality, the better the chances of us being able to use them. Because there's some really great pictures that you think show up fine on the website that are, 180 kilobit, maybe a 400 by 800 pixel, which isn't a whole lot. And it looks great on the website, but when you take it off of there and try to print it out or to expand it to fill space or whatever, it gets really grainy, and we can't use those pictures for practical publication purposes. So the higher the pixels, the better. And think big when you're thinking about the photography.
I was going to say, with pictures of Field Day, there are certain things that may happen unexpectedly inside of your group. Somebody may show up that is of some notoriety, or there may just be some special condition that'll take place out of the clear blue that you have no idea what's going to happen. And it's just great to take a picture, and be able to.
One of the greatest pictures I remember from any Field Day, and this goes back to the Field Day in Ottawa, Canada. We were absolutely deluged overnight. I think we had 7 or 8 inches of rain overnight. There was flash flooding in the area, streets underwater. The Field Day site became so inundated by the next morning that the drainage system for the complex could not handle everything. So we had to move antennas, we had to move generators. And there's a great picture of, which I did put into QSD, of the gentleman, Glenn McLeod from Canada, who had coordinated this whole marvelous effort, literally swimming across the top of the drainage area in probably 4 feet of water. And just a great, I would not encourage people to do that openly because it's dangerous with that and suction and currents and things like that. But you never know when that great picture is going to happen. So keep your cameras handy.
You know, I guess the other thing, too, is human pictures, especially if you're there to capture that moment when some young person that's never had any experience at all with ham radio sees something that lights up the eyes. And if you can get that facial expression.
Yeah, there's that magic moment, and they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Those pictures are worth far more than 1,000 words. When all of a sudden the light bulb goes on and, hey, I get it. This is fun. I want to do this. And you can't put a price on those.
Well, I know those moments occur at field day. Those are when you get the maximum number of those kind of moments with people because they all of a sudden they wake up and realize, wow, look at what's going on here. When you're talking about the contest side of field day, And I don't want to leave this out because it's so important that we make lots of contacts. You know, it's so important that we connect as many stations together as we can possibly connect. Our guest is Dan Henderson from the American Radio Relay League. We'll be right back with Dan right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas TW2010, and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And, of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these. If not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently, go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello. Tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month. And we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air. But don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. Here's a reminder. QSO will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your field day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He is the ARRL Regulatory Information Manager, along with the man in charge of field day. Tell me a little bit about the mechanics of that. For folks that don't know anything at all about field day, or new hams that are just getting into the hobby, a little bit about how that works, the mechanics behind it. Because when you go to make that contact, you have to follow a certain format, so to speak. There's certain information that you want to pass. And why don't you explain a little bit of that? Because there's folks, I'm sure, what I'm really, really concerned about, too, and that is boiling it down to something very, very simple that people can understand. If they have a fear, there's a lot of folks, I know folks that were afraid to come out and operate field day because they didn't know, they felt like they didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't want to admit that. So why don't you take us through a little primer here and tell us how it's all set up?
Once you establish contact, each contact is going to be an exchange of what we call the field day exchange, which is going to be three pieces of information. It's going to be the number of transmitters that you have running simultaneously. It can be anywhere from one. I think theoretically I figured it out once that the maximum number of transmitters that you could have if you had a digital, a CW, and a phone transmitter on every possible field day eligible band, you can have 69 transmitters at once. I'm not sure how many 300 gigahertz contacts you're going to be making on 300 gigahertz phone or 300 gigahertz digital, but it would be theoretically possible. So the first part of the exchange is going to be the number of transmitters in simultaneous operation. The most common numbers are 2 and 3. Groups with 2 and 3 transmitters or individuals with 2 or 3 transmitters operating at once are the two largest numbers you find. The second is going to be a letter between A and F, and that refers to the type of operation which you were running. An A group, class A as it's called, is a group of 3 or more people that are set up somewhere in a remote location, away from their normal operating place. A class B station is going to be a 1 or 2 person operation, set up in just like a Class A would be, except it's only 1 or 2 people involved. And remember, it's participants, not operators. You might have a 1B station with one person and 2 transmitters, or it could be 2 operators with 2 transmitters. A Class 3 may only, or a Class A station may only have 1 person who actually makes contacts. But if other people have helped them, 3 or more, that becomes a Class A, so that's a little distinction between those two. A Class C operation is a class where you are operating from a station that is designed and operated mobile, and you can operate it in motion. So you have a little problem there. You can't pull over to the side of the road, throw the antenna up into the tree, and claim your Class C, because I don't think you got enough coax to go down the road at 60 miles an hour with that. So you have to be careful of that, but it is designed and operated while in motion. Class D is a home station. I don't want to sell the home station on commercial power or emergency power, either one short. In an emergency, not everybody can get out into the field and set up and do those kind of things. In an emergency, a large and very important group are those that have the good stations at home that operate from home using their commercial power because they're not affected. This was significant in Katrina, for example. A lot of the communications that were being relayed in were coming from home stations that were operating. So Class D is a home station operating under commercial power. This would also include if your club is operating from its clubhouse where it has the station set up. That would be a Class D operation, excuse me. If you're operating from a home station and you're using 100% emergency power, you're actually Class E, as in Echo. And the last class, which was added a couple of years ago, is called Class F. And this is called the EOC station. This is the station that is set up and operating basically in conjunction with your emergency management officials or at the local emergency operating center. This is not where you decide, hey, we're going to go down and we're going to throw up the antenna outside the courthouse where the EOC is and we're going to pretend we're Class E or Class F. That is not what the Class F station is. The rule of thumb that I tell people is for Class F, you need to be actually practicing what you would do in a real emergency. That means the emergency management officials have got to be involved. If your plan is to be operating from a remote site and with a 2-meter link established to the EOC to maintain that two-way communication, that has to be activated for the entire field day operation. So then some requirements with the Class F station. Class F station is not designed, well, the county's going to lend us their mobile command post, we're going to drive it out into the field, and then they're going to go home, and we're just going to stay out here and play, and then they'll come pick it up tomorrow afternoon. That's still a Class A. It's an important station, but the Class F station is where you're actually rehearsing your relationship and how you would be interacting with emergency management. So those are the first two pieces of information in your field day exchange, the number of transmitters, your operating class. The third is your ARRL section, and this is normally your state. Pennsylvania has two, though, western and eastern Pennsylvania. New York has, we have New York, Long Island, we have northern New York, and we have western New York. We have three sections in New York. California, I think, has eight. So it's not necessarily your state, but it's your ARRL section. You can find those on the ARRL contest website at ARRL.org/contest. It's also, there is a complete list of ARRL sections, including the Canadian provinces and territories, included in the field day package, which can also be downloaded from ARRL.org/field day. And so your complete field day exchange, if you were working me, I will be working at W1AW this year. We're going to be operating as 3F. And so I would give to you, Ted, 3 Foxtrot Connecticut would be my exchange to you. You're going to give me back to whatever exchange operation information you're working. You might be 2 Alpha Tennessee or whatever that is. And once you've exchanged that, it sounds complicated. It's all explained in the rules packet. We'll make it easier. But get on and listen to people, and you're going to find people who are going to help talk. If you're not sure, people on the air will help talk you through it because they want you to succeed, they want you to have fun, and they want the contact, to be real honest. So exchange that. Once you've got the contacts made, you can submit the scores in a couple of ways. You can either send in the summary sheet, which is part of the field day package. You mail that in with your various proofs of bonuses and things like that. That's all explained in the field day packet very well. Or you can go to another website, which is www.b4h.com/CABFORMS, cab forms, www.b4h.com/cab forms. Bruce Horn, WA7BMN, who is a member of the ARRL Contest Advisory Committee, he's a big ARRL supporter and helper for us, has a form there where you can actually submit your summary sheet and do all the paperwork except the actual dupe sheets of contacts. You can do all your paperwork online and submit it that way. You will see it on the website the next day that confirms we got it, and you get bonus points for doing that too. And let me tell you, offering bonus points, people will do it.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I guess the reason why I wanted to ask that is because I've had a lot of folks say to me, you know, I've listened in on field day, and I'm home, and I'm not able to get out to a field day location, but I sure would like to participate, but I don't understand what they're doing. And I think it's important that even if you can't get out to a field day site, by all means, jump in and participate in field day by talking to...
If you don't have 24 hours, which is what the field day period is, trust me, I will be going home at some point during field day. I don't go 24 hours anymore. But if you can get on for only 20 minutes because your daughter's bar mitzvah is that afternoon, or your niece's birthday party, or the bridal shower, or your wife has got the honeydew project and it's going to eat up all day, and then you've got the dinner party that night. If you can only get on for 20 minutes, get on and have some fun for that 20 minutes. Everybody should be on the air for field day. There should never be excuse for not doing it unless, yeah, well, there are legitimate excuses. I will concede that point. But you should never not say, I don't want to do it this year. It's just old. It's the same old thing. Because you never know what you're going to learn. Maybe a little bit about propagation. Never assume that 10 meters is dead because of the missing sunspots. It's amazing that when people get on the air, you may only be getting ground wave contacts. But there are people there that are sitting there just like you. And if you're not calling CQ, you're not working anybody.
We just had a big discussion about that here not too long ago, the fact that so many people go up and they turn the radio on, they flip up to, say, 15 meters or 17, they go up and down the band, they don't hear anything, and that the band's closed, you know. But someone gets on and calls a persistent CQ for a little while, the next thing you know, he's got a whole handful of contacts.
Because other people that are doing the same thing.
Exactly. You know, I want to tell the folks to go to the website and find out. Now, of course, it's ARRL.org, www.ARRL.org, and there is the field day icon insignia there. You can click on it. It'll take you right straight into all the field day information, and you can find out. And there's also a locator. Tell us a little bit about the locator.
This was an exciting thing we added last year. You do not have to pre-register for field day. You get on and have fun, but every year there are dozens of emails and phone calls of, I'm looking for a club in my area, I'm going to be traveling that weekend, I'd like to find a club to do field day with. So what we provide is a place where an individual or a club can go register their field day site if you want visitors, if you're open to having visitors come by. It's very simple. We map it out with Google Maps. Your contact information for your location, your club name, your state, your city, if you've got a talk-in frequency, a contact person, things like that. And when I looked this afternoon, I think it was 1,177 groups and clubs across the U.S., all 50 states, most of the Canadian provinces, Puerto Rico, and I didn't do the complete list, but over almost 1,200 groups and organizations have registered their sites so far. And last year was the first year we did it. We had 1,500. I'm sure we'll be there by the end of next week. But it's a great place for you, again, to make your site known to where individuals that are looking for a site to visit can come see you. They can get the information, know who to call, know what frequency to monitor if they need talk-in while they're driving in and things like that. It's just another way, again, to try to make sure that we are accessible to as many people as we possibly can. And you don't have to be a ham to use that site to find them on that site either. It's amazing. Last year, I think one of my favorite calls was a guy. He and his wife were taking the kids to Disneyland. No, to Disney World in Orlando on Field Day weekend. And he said, but I just can't be away from Field Day. I've done Field Day every year. I've been a ham. Where can I find one? I could put him right on the Field Day website and say, here's 7 clubs or 9 clubs or whatever within easy driving distance of where you're going to be in Orlando. Yeah, I got an email from him afterwards saying, hey, that was great. I've found a club within 3 miles of the hotel we were staying at. Thank you. I had a blast. And, yeah, that's what it's about. Again, getting back to field day is to have fun. And the more things we can do to encourage that, to get people on the air, people engaged with the community, people making contacts, people having the great food at the Covered Dish Supper, people renewing old friendships and making new friends. That's why I got into this hobby in the first place. And I guess I'm probably close to being Field Day's number one cheerleader these days, and I'll gladly accept that title.
Our guest is Dan Henderson from the American Radio Relay League. We'll be right back with Dan right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, dot com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with the computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Here at QSO, we've got something new, and that's a prize closet. And we are in the process of filling that prize closet up. And we're going to be telling you on the air some of the items that we've got in the prize closet. If you'd like to win some of these things, we'd love to see you do that. But what you've got to do is send us an email. Go up to the website, tedrandall.com or qsoradioshow.com. And when you go to that website, just simply send us an email. Say hello, tell us where you're listening, how the signal's coming in. If you're listening by podcast, tell us how you have joined this radio show. And then put a little note in there that says, I want to win. And we'll put your name in the hat, and we will have a drawing twice a month, and we're going to be giving away what's in our prize closet. Now, I can't tell you everything that's in there so far, but we'll be posting those items up on the website, and we'll be telling you about them on the air, but don't miss out. Send us an email and put in that email, I want to win. And let's see who the lucky winners will be. Here's a reminder. QSO will be broadcasting live from ARRL Field Day 2009. Be sure and remember to call in your reports from your field day location. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our special guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He is the ARRL Regulatory Information Manager, along with the man in charge of Field Day. Well, the locator is handy because you can find somebody very close by. And one thing that a lot of folks have heard, have had a lot of fun, is they've moved away from home, and they'll look up the Field Day in the area that they were raised in just to see what's there, and they've all been very surprised.
I looked today to see if my club back home, and that's, I'm still a member of the club back in North Carolina, I looked today to see if W4MOE was on the map, and they are.
You know, the other thing that I wanted to ask about, and this is just because I'm curious because I don't know. How does IRLP and Echolink figure into Field Day?
Oh, this is where I'm going to lose all my fans out there, Ted. Remember that repeated contacts are not permitted. And so all the contacts must be made using amateur radio RF. So you may be a great Echolink fan, and it's a great technology. Matter of fact, I'm in Dallas for a meeting on another technology very similar to that, to D-Star users. They're great technologies. They have a lot of place in a lot of our hobby, but the all contacts for credit have got to be point-to-point without being repeated, with the exception of the satellite contact, which is a bonus point that I did not mention earlier. So, unfortunately, you cannot be using Echolink and VoIP contacts for contest credit, but let me tell you this. That's a great thing to have demonstrated, whether it counts for credit or not, because it's another way that you can link in. And I could envision very easily the educational bonus being an instruction of, you know, little half an hour, 45-minute seminar with the group on, hey, this is how you use Echolink or how you use, because again, you're building the knowledge base there. So while you don't get directly points for them for making contacts via Echolink or repeated contacts, it's certainly an educational thing that you can add to it and potential for the bonus there as well.
Well, I wanted to ask that because I didn't understand where it figured in. I think maybe, you know, just as kind of a hint that we might want to consider in the future at some point in time opening up that door, because I could see lots of possibilities there for a younger crowd to come in and to be able to put their hands around the thing, so to speak. In other words, this is the link with the computer. This is the link that folks are looking for. I don't know. I mean, to me, and I've heard the old guys come along and say, let's just not amateur radio. You know, I don't have no computer in my shack. You know, and I just kind of want to cringe when people say things like that, because I've watched and I've witnessed the magic of those having two repeaters linked together via the internet and guys talking back and forth, or these two machines, one's overseas and one's here in the U.S. And that's all technology. I mean, this is we wouldn't have cell phones today if amateurs had not have come up with this idea of a repeater and an auto patch and all the things that we grew up with. And back then, it was so unusual. If people see you make a phone call on an HT, they were totally amazed. You know, they'd never seen anything like that before. Now, most people that have cell phones don't realize they're talking on a radio. So, you know, I don't know. I'd put the bug in someone's ear and say, you know, maybe we ought to revisit this. This might be something. Of course, I don't know. The folks at Echolink and the guys that run IRLP, they may not want all that traffic on
the
system.
Well, I can make the analogy, and I certainly will pitch anything. And I, fortunately, am not the person who makes and writes the rules. I'm very grateful I don't have to bear that responsibility. But something similar, we did have for a while the ability to make packet contacts back in the 90s when packet radio was really first up and going and was becoming popular. We were approached finally by the packet sysops to please eliminate the bonus because it was tying up their systems to the point that their usual traffic could not be processed, because you would have people who would digipeat from repeater to repeater to repeater and then start polling mailboxes which had been set up for such a purpose. You know, they would connect to the person's mailbox, which would automatically send back the Field Day Exchange. They would send the Field Day Exchange back, and even though it was an automated contact, not a two-way two-person contact, mm-hmm. And you know, that really wasn't in the spirit of what they were doing there. But you know, the right kind of proposal to how IRLP and VoIP type technologies could be brought into it. Certainly, you know, the people that discuss it, they're always, yeah, they've tweaked the rules before, and it's always something that could be considered along the way. Can't promise that it's going to happen, because you have to look at not just the upsides, but how, you know, it might impact non-field-day related stuff along the way. But Heck, rules are written to be changed sometimes.
Well, I may have opened up a can of worms here, so and the folks from Echolink may want to get their hands around my neck right now for even saying anything like that. I don't know, because I can't speak on their behalf. But it was just something. It's such an exciting new technology. You know, people have got these little notebooks. I mean, I've got one with a wireless connection on it, and I can hook up to the internet going down the road. And that's just very cool, because there's sometimes that band conditions aren't right, and you want to make a contact, you want to talk to someone. And I was amazed at all the IRLP activity that was going on during Dayton. That was
of course, Ted, to the old fuddy-duddy side of me, and going back, well, it's not RF. But what happens when the internet link isn't available in an emergency because the infrastructure has been incapacitated to the point that you cannot interface to the internet at that point in time? So that's just, yeah, it's got its I see some upsides, I see some downsides to it, and I'll let the powers that be, if they want to start discussions on that. That's why they are the people who make those decisions.
I want to do one other thing here, and that is this, because you wear a different hat also with the ARRL. I'd like for you to kind of bring us up to date a little bit on what's going on with our new FCC person, and what direction do you see things going in at this point?
With Laura Smith, I have had the good opportunity to sit down with Laura on a couple of occasions on a couple of issues. She and I do talk frequently. She's not asking me how to do her job, and that's important for me to know. The ARRL isn't pulling the strings for what she does. She is extremely tuned in to enforcement. She's very pragmatic. Don't take Laura things that really don't matter. That may sound an odd way to put it. She wants to go after the truly bad actors. And I could mention a couple of situations. I'm not going to mention them by name on the air. Yeah, but you know, there are situations out there that are truly problems to our service, to what we do. They give us a black eye. There are people that are operating illegally. There are people that are instigating those problems. And Laura is willing to tackle them within the confines of what is legal under Part 97 and what is not. She's not playing favorites. I'm aware of a couple of instances where it's maybe not been the right, it hasn't been the popular thing to do what she's done, but she's done the right thing according to what the rules of the service are. She's not going to run away from controversy that way. She's very well organized. She's no Riley Hollingsworth, though, either. She is going to be, and Riley is one of my good friends. Let me preface that, and then Riley and I talk frequently still as well. Riley sometimes would take a more casual, I almost call it a folksy approach to resolving a problem, where Laura is going to take the more direct approach to that sometimes. But I've also seen some of the, hey, guys, we really need to shape this up sort of stuff from Laura as well. She's going to be an enforcer. She is not going to let things slip. One of the sad things that I saw very early on after her appointment, I had within 2 or 3 days, I had some emails, well, we need to get rid of her. She's not even a ham. Well, let me tell you, you don't have to be a ham to be a lawyer. And as far as her case, let me tell you, her father-in-law was the head of the office of OET, the Office of Engineering and Technology at the FCC, and he was their enforcer for many years. She's got enforcement in her blood. She knows that sometimes the right thing is not the popular thing, but she's going to do the right thing. I'm very impressed with Laura. I think an exhibit of how she's taken the bull by the horns. If you go to the FCC's website, you will see enforcement actions are now being posted again. She recently has been wrapping up, I think it's 13 separate power line cases where power line companies are causing harmful interference to the amateur bands, been reported, and 13 instances where she has been with the power company saying, you got to clean it up. And these are things that power companies have drugged their heels on in the past. She's going to be active. And I think we're very lucky. We're very lucky not to have lost the enforcement job in the first place. And that was a real possibility at one point in time. But we're also very lucky to have the person that we have because she's here for the duration. She's not a short-termer. She's not looking to transfer to another job at the SEC when she gets the opportunity. And she's committed to trying to preserve our hobby and to try to do the right things. And we're just very lucky to have Laura Smith.
Well, you know, I guess the thing of it is that it's a tough job. And you wouldn't think in our hobby when people get to the point where they're passing general class and extra class tests and getting those licenses, you wouldn't think that you would have some of the activity that we wind up having. And
it's amazing.
It is a necessary job, and I know it's not a popular job. In other words, from the standpoint that the folks that tend to be the ones that misbehave are the ones that really are that make all the noise and create all the problems and make someone's job like that kind of a nightmare. But nonetheless, it's a necessary thing, and I think that without that, of course, we're going to have a whole lot of problems in terms of justifying the hobby to the rest of our country. In terms of, you know, if we've got people on the air that are just renegades acting up all the time, there's nobody watching the shop.
Yeah, we're very lucky in our hobby as the strong sense of self-policing, the strong commitment by the vast, vast majority of the ham radio operators in this country of wanting to do the right thing and to trying to do the right thing. The percentage of the licensees that are what Laura, her term is bad actors, it is so small, but unfortunately it's a small percentage that can do irreparable damage at times. And we're very fortunate that Laura has got a good handle on that as quickly as she has. And frankly, I'm knowing some things that's been going on with her since almost the first day on the job, and I'm impressed with the results I'm seeing. And we're very lucky to have her on the job.
You know, you deal with a lot of this stuff firsthand, and I think this is a good time to kind of address this too. And that is, you know, we don't really hear a lot in terms of amateur radio about how, what do I want to say, operational ethics maybe, or ham radio manners, if you follow. You know, we don't hear that.
Yep.
That used to be part of, matter of fact, I mean, we can go back to the days of Hiram Percy Maxim and the Wolf Hung, you know, and all the tongue-in-cheek stuff that he did was specifically there to humiliate someone who really and truly was not paying attention or was deliberately acting up. Hopefully what that provided was some peer pressure or enough peer pressure to where that person would back off and stop the shenanigans. I mean, I guess that was the purpose of it. I mean, and of course, that was all done tongue in cheek. And I think that was part of the genius of Maxim, was that was his method of attacking it, you know, and I think it was very, very effective. But today we almost need a little bit of coaching, especially to new guys that get on the air. And, let me ask a couple questions, and you may want to, because you deal with the enforcement division so much. In other words, that's what you do. When an operator gets on, and you're in the middle of a QSO, and all of a sudden one of these characters comes by, and either they maybe QRM the group that you're on, or they get on and they make all sorts of offhanded comments, and you have these things. What's the best way for a group of amateurs that are on the air to handle those kind of situations?
What's more important is, Ted, is what you should not do. You are never going to win the on-the-air confrontation. Ain't going to happen. Somebody's going to lose their cool. Somebody that is doing the kind of things that you talked about is trying to bait you into responding. Do not acknowledge them. because that's what they want. They want the attention. They're children that want the attention. And it gets frustrating to the people that are trying to do the right things, that are out there operating safely, legally, and appropriately. But then you get, every once in a while, you get, frankly, they're jerks that they're going to respond to their ego needs by trying to jam somebody or interrupting or using inappropriate language or things like that. Like Riley Hollingsworth used to say, and I think this is one of his prize comments, the big dial on the radio hasn't changed the function as long as he's been in the hobby. QSY, if they follow you, then you have some recourse for if you can figure out who they are. You know, when it becomes deliberate interference like that, that's an issue the SEC can deal with. But it's got to be habitual. It can't be a one-time thing. And there's parameters in there for you to use your best judgment on. But the absolute worst thing an individual can do is try to educate this person or engage them in, you know, you're screwing up, you're making me mad, you're doing this kind of thing. That's what they want. That's how they get their jollies. And the more you encourage them that way, the bigger the problem is going to be. So the best advice I can give somebody like that is ignore them. If they aren't going to be ignored, QSY, find another night where they're not going to be on or whatever. It's a shame that their behavior causes us to lose the enjoyment of our hobby. But, yeah, whatever you do, don't stoop to their level, because then you have the problem as well. If the SEC comes knocking on the door saying, why did you do this? You want to avoid that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think that the key factor is to realize when somebody, one of these guys comes on and does this, or a group of them do, the first thing you have to do is you have to refuse the challenge.
Yes.
Because that's what it is. It's a challenge, okay? And you're right, they want you to react. But the big thing is you can't allow them to destroy your day or your peace of mind or your enjoyment. You know, I think that when you put that into perspective, and everyone just refuses to react, then chances are they're going to go away. Now, there are those that won't, that will persist and all that sort of thing. And then you're right. Then it's time to just flip the dial to another location or change bands, you know, or just shut the radio off and go watch television for a while. They can't play to a non-audience. I mean, there's nobody listening. There's nothing they can do, you know.
And again, if it's continual, if you QSY and they follow you, then it's obviously deliberate interference. And if it gets into a continual habit, if it gets into a continual pattern, you know, there are things you can do. You can talk to the ARRL OO coordinators and see if we can get an OO who can help identify who they are. But it's got to be more than a one-time shot. You asked about Laura a few minutes ago, and I can pretty well tell you this. Don't say, well, I heard Dan Henderson on the air the other day, and Dan Henderson used bad language, so Dan Henderson needs to lose his license. Maybe I do. But, yeah, a one-time affair or something like that isn't going to be grounds to where she's going to have to prioritize things. And a one-time shot of somebody being on the air acting inappropriately is not going to be a situation where the instant letter slapping somebody on the wrist or saying you're going to lose your license if you don't straighten up. You've got to put things into balance that way. And, yeah, this is one of those cases. Don't respond to them. Don't lower yourself to their level. And, yeah, but be practical with what you can expect. Turn it off the radio sometime, and I've been known to do that, especially when I've been operating from W1AW, which for some reason becomes the national tune-up frequency for some people.
Well, we've got one here on 75 meters that I swear is the national tune-up frequency. I have it on sometimes during the day, and it's where the Tennessee phone net meets. And, I mean, it's just carrier after carrier after carrier, people tuning up, and you wonder, what are they tuning? You know, what on earth can take that much tuning? The other thing is I was going to mention this, too. I was listening to a QSO one night, and it was a roundtable, a bunch of regulars that were in there. And the one guy that was on, he slipped and used a little language that he shouldn't be using on the air, okay? But nonetheless, it was not much worse than what you hear on broadcast radio. And that gets pretty bad, much to my dismay. But nonetheless, the fellow used he made a slip. He was excited. He was talking, and all of a sudden, this just blurted out. And there was a gentleman jumped in all of a sudden, and he'd been listening for quite some time, and he decided that he was going to extol the virtues of bad language, or using the virtues of using good language, and the problems of using bad language to this fella. And he jumped in the middle of that and went on. Well, the next thing you know, there was a free-for-all going on that frequency. I mean, he incited a riot, you know.
The frequency cops can be just as disastrous as the bad actors.
Well, see, I guess the question I have is, you know, as far as ethics are concerned, what are the things you stay away from? What is it that you found are the common denominators that are things that maybe somebody thinks they're doing a good thing, but really all they're doing is pushing someone's button?
Oh, I haven't given that one a lot of thought to think about an answer for that one. But, yeah, when you try to embarrass somebody on the air, kid, to embarrass them into doing the right thing, you quite frankly are probably ethically as wrong as they ever were. There are ways to resolve things without getting on the air and airing the dirty laundry there. I would encourage people never to do that. Again, I'll go back to something Riley has said. You never know who's listening. And there are times on certain frequency bands that I would never want a visitor in my shack and me just turn on the radio and tune around to see what you might hear. And unfortunately, there's some bands where it can get pretty pretty dramatic. Something that you occasionally hear, and this will occasionally come across my desk, you know, that, well, yeah, Dan's a good old guy until Dan gets a few shots of bourbon into him, and once Dan gets tanked, you know, he's just, and, you know, that's not, what he's doing is not appropriate, but you attracting attention to it that way is also not appropriate. You've got to conduct yourself on the air in a way that is not going to embarrass yourself. And, you know, when you think that you're, you know, being Don Quixote riding to the rescue of the poor fair Dulcinea because you're going to jump in and you're going to take on the big bad guy who's acting bad on the air, remember that Don Quixote was a myth. And all he did was exacerbate bad problems along the way. And, you know, it's act like your mama is listening to you is maybe not a bad advice to take sometimes. My mother, I certainly wouldn't want her to hear some of the things that I have heard on the air. And all you can do is try to conduct yourself with enough deportment and care. You know, our bands are fragile. There is always somebody that can think of another purpose or another service or another technology that would just be perfect for that band or this ham band or whatever. And, you know, when the bad actors get to the point that they overwhelm the system of the FCC, or, you know, if AT&T wanted the frequency or Southern Bell or one of the Bell companies, hey, we got this technology, would be perfect for this band, and just listen to the stuff the hams are on there anyway. That's not what you want on those bands. We can at least use them effectively and efficiently. You've always got to be, you never know where that threat is going to come from. And so, you know, my best advice is, you know, act like you're talking to your mama sometimes.
And I guess the thing of it is I think you're right when it comes to trying to criticize someone's operating procedure over the air is just an invite, you know, for more problems. Because if they're on there acting bad, you know, they've probably done it before, and they are not going to respect your wishes. All you're going to do is add fuel to the fire and probably make them even worse than what they are. I've heard this repeated over and over where guys are there trying to extol the advice, and I just cringe and I just think, just go silent, just don't say anything, you know. And eventually something will happen, and you know, you know, and you don't know, too. I mean, I've tuned in and listened, and I have caught the guy on the air who's had too much to drink tonight, you know, and you know what? That may be the only incident. I mean, he may have only done this one time. You may have caught him on the worst night of his life, you know. You know, so, and then there's those that probably get drunk every night and get on the air. But I mean, if you've always got to give that person the benefit of the doubt that this just may be a bad night for them, you know, and kind of reserve judgment a bit. But
yeah, moving on is always good advice.
But I wanted to talk about that a little bit, and I wanted to find out what was going on as far as enforcement is concerned, because a lot of folks have been concerned about that since Riley's departure. And, of course, there were those folks that thought Riley was the greatest thing that's ever happened to the enforcement division, and there were people that just didn't like him at all, and I haven't been able to piece all of that together. It makes really no sense to me as to why a person would feel, against Riley or opposed to Riley. I mean, he had a job to do, and he was trying to do his job is basically what it was, and he got near retirement, and that's what happens. I mean, folks retire.
I tend to think that the ones that were not necessarily Riley fans were probably mostly the ones that ended up on the wrong side of one of the Riley grams going out. So
that's more than likely the case. I want to thank you so much for being on board with us. You know, we're going to be broadcasting live during Field Day, and we want everyone to call in. And, you know, one thing I was going to mention, Dan, one thing that's really cool about that is if you can get a picture of the person who is your spokesperson on the phone, talking on the telephone, you know, you can always make the announcement that your Field Day activities were broadcast and publicized over worldwide radio. And that's a good feather in your hat, you know, to have. You know, we were on shortwave. We went all the way around the world. And everybody knows about what we're doing. The Field Day broadcast has been, last year was just, I don't know if you caught any of it, but it was just fantastic. And it was so much fun. All these people calling in from all over the place, and everybody was just having a big time. And it was like a great, big, gigantic party on the air is what it was.
I have to admit, Ted, that last year is the first time in probably 30 years that I have not been active on Field Day, but it was because I was at the big ham fair at Friedrichshafen, Germany for the first time, which happens to always be Field Day weekend. So I'm up for Field Day this year because I did not get my Field Day hit last year.
Well, you know, I want to encourage everyone to call in from their local club and their local location, wherever they are, and give us a report and talk about what you're eating on Field Day and how many stations you got set up and who's there. And get some of those folks that are, you know, we had people pulling in the oldest fellow there and the youngest person there and putting them on the air. And we had several people that handed the phone over to their public officials and put them on the air. And we had a lot of fun with this. It really, really was enjoyable. And, of course, it'll be up on iTunes in the form of a podcast later, so folks can go up there and play it back and listen to it if they can. But I was amazed at the number of people at Field Day locations that had their shortwave radios on, and they were listening to the other clubs call in. They were saying, "Oh, let, you know, we heard so and so," and all that. It was just really special. So what we're trying to do is promote it and then make it even more special by being able to tie all these folks together under one umbrella and give them a mouthpiece so they can get on the air and talk about all the stuff that they're doing and to promote their local club.
It's definitely our time to shine. I encourage people to get on during Field Day. Remember, one important part, and this is one of the components that I did not mention earlier about Field Day, remember that there is a special W1AW Field Day bulletin that we will be transmitting on both Morse code, phone, on digital, on Ready. We'll also be sending it out a special PSK31 bulletin for people that are using that mode. We are very fortunate to partner with K6KPH, the historic station out in California, which will retransmit the bulletins on a schedule, the same bulletin we do from W1AW, to where we're trying to maximize coverage where everybody has a chance to do that. Make sure you do that. It's an important part of the Field Day information, so you can become a little bit accustomed to, in an emergency, what W1AW would be doing. It's a new source for you to get information. Get on and do it. And everybody, get on the air. It's our time to shine. It's our time to have fun. And I will be the operator, one of the operators at W1AW. Please come work me. I need all the contacts I can get.
There you go. There you go. We'll be looking for you, Dan. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, and y'all have a good evening.
Thank you much, and I've enjoyed this. You'll have to come back and join us again sometime soon.
We'd be happy to.
At QSO, we've got a new prize closet, and we've got some interesting things going into that prize closet. Be sure and write us and send us that email that says, I want to win. Put that in the text somewhere in that email and go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. That's going to do it for QSO this week. That's all the time we have. Special thank you to our guest, Dan Henderson, N1ND. He's the Regulatory Information Manager for the American Radio Relay League and the man in charge of Field Day. If you're listening on Tuesday, remember this show airs again on Thursday, same time, same station. Join us next week again for QSO.